Sure.
Can someone tell me how often and how severe is it that every single medication gives you diarrhea? Like, at some point in time, it's not worth it.
Ready the Armada. Kenobi.
I'm not a monster.
Oh, you know,
he's showing
me. Hey, come on.
Kenobi!
Welcome to Films in Black and White, everybody. How are you all feeling? It is a great Monday to be with you all. This song has me amped to start like getting after it. So I'm very thrilled. We got a great episode. We're going to talk Civil War, the A24 movie that just came out recently, starring Kirsten Dunst. Might touch on one or two other things here. But we are so thrilled. It's going to be a great Monday. But in order to do it right, and in order to do it well, I need to thoroughly invite and welcome everybody into this space. So I'm going to kick it on over to Brian Roush, a.k.a. Hello. New People's Army Captain. Brian, how are you feeling, sir?
Okay. You know what? I'm feeling great to be here. I'm so happy. I have a space to talk about the movie Civil War, A24 Civil War, because this movie messed me up good. I'm also really happy to have some people here, because this movie is a lot, and there was a lot of really bad takes. I'm usually not this guy, but there's a lot of bad takes from like reviewers and people like on the Clock app. So I'm happy to be with my guys. All right. That's the short answer here. I'm happy to be with my guys. So thank you for welcoming me into the space, Doug. How are you?
I am doing well. Cause I can't help, but every time I hear the phrase Civil War, think about the Guns N' Roses song Civil War. And so excellent. That was my problem.
Yes.
Is that
good.
Every time good. I heard someone says Civil War, I'm like, like that's all I can think of in the back of my head, like, and how it starts. What we have here is a failure to communicate. Like that there's something about that song that just triggers me every time I hear it. But he gets it. Like that's how, because it's a super Southern accent. So I love, you know me, I'm a big accent fanatic.
That's very true.
Accurate.
But other than that, I'm doing really well. I think I'm over my cold.
That's good.
Planning a birthday for a 7-year-old, so all the things that come along with
that's
that
high priority work right there. That's so a full time job.
It's wild times, but Marcus J. Destin, aka Somebody Stop Jesse Plemons, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm ready to pod. My guys are being flexible. As soon as I thought I was walking out of the building, you know, something catches on fire.
That's okay.
You always got to go back. But anything
you start the fire?
Sometimes.
That's the fun part.
Sometimes. No, but I'm here. That movie was very, Civil War was very heavy, but I'm ready to pod, ready to dissect it with my guys.
I'm very excited to get into it. I want to talk about, we'll get to it when we get to it. But the way that Marcus sat down in this theater, I was very concerned for his well-being when he sat down. We'll get into it when we
get there. Yeah. Oh, man, Brian.
We'll get into it.
You know
we'll
me, get into brother. It.
I wish I could have seen this with you, because I was like, I don't know if I'm ready to see this. I was alone. I was like one of five. So.
But Brian, tell the people how they stay in touch with us. Give them the rundown. Take it away, sir.
Hey folks, the best way that you can support us is by signing up for our Patreon. You can head over to patreon.com/filmsinblackandwhite. You can see all the ways to support us. We have different tiers. If you have $5, you can support us. If you have $20, you can support us. If you're not able to sign up for one of those tiers and all of the amazing benefits they give you, make sure to follow us on socials. That is the best way for us to show up in algorithms. You know this game. You listen to this podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Films in Black and White. You can find us on Facebook at Films in Black and White as well. And of course, Instagram is where we put all of our funny clips on those reels. So definitely make sure to follow. And again, we are going to be having spoilers for the A24 movie Civil War by Alex Garland. So you have been warned. We are going to be deep diving it like we do with our style. So we're getting into all of the nitty gritty. We are leaving no stone left unturned.
Absolutely. So we are starting a little bit later, so we're gonna forego Catch That Quotable this week. We're gonna get our give ourselves and all of you, the listeners, the watchers, a week off from Catch That Quotable. So big ups to Roman for sending us a quote. We'll bank that one. Maybe we'll get to it next week, or we'll do a new one. But
thank you, Roman.
Appreciate you sending that.
What was that fill in the blank style like last week? I thought that was
I enjoyed that a lot. Like fire. That was a good one. I enjoyed
even
that
even though
one.
We didn't follow his rules exactly. We had fun with
no,
it.
We did not.
We had fun, and that's
who are,
and that's
the who are we not to help each other.
It would be criminal if we didn't.
Like,
it
would be.
I would be mad too. Yeah. Before we get into Civil War, I did just want to do like a quick little mini review because I'm a little bit of a rabbit hole this past week.
Really?
So the Amazon Prime show Fallout.
Yeah.
Yes.
That came out last week on Wednesday, and it was bumped up like a week and a half.
Yeah.
And I've watched 7.5 out of the 8 episodes already.
Whoa.
This show is very good.
Like,
I enjoy this show a lot. This show captures like elements that if you played the RPGs like growing up and if you played them, like it does a lot of those things. It's got so many like quick little nods to things like from the game where you like look at it and you're like, oh shit, like that's a thing. But what I think it does really well is rather than it just be, and I won't go any much deeper because I don't want to ruin it, but like, I can do the first episode. So the first episode is all about establishing like this world. And it sort of does like a back in time with how did we get to this point and sort of where it's at. It has that like 50s vibe.
Excellent.
And then it flashes, then bomb goes off and it jumps into you are in a Fallout bunker. You're in a bunker with the group of Bunker 33 as they get ready to do an exchange with Bunker 32 to have this sort of like marriage to sort of propagate the species more and to not have it be. And it's an exchange. So it's like it's a whole thing and they establish the lore really, really well.
Awesome.
But then you come to find out that the folks in Bunker 32 are not 32 bunkerites. They are raiders pretending to be Bunker 32.
Funny.
So it's very, very well done. It's this sort of like bait and switch with that.
Yeah.
Walter Goggins plays a ghoul, but also plays some folks in the back. Like he's the cowboy from going back in time too. But it's really well done. And that's what I like about this is that it's woven such a mystery throughout.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot about like how with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, we liked all of the different like side quests and things like that. Like that was a main portion of this that like it was a deterrent, but it was also something that we kind of enjoyed.
Yeah.
This TV series is very much that way of like, oh, you have to go here. Oh, but shoot, something happened. So now you have to like redo your steps and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So again, it does a lot of this like reminder of the video game that I really, really like. But the mystery element that it weaves throughout all of it is also well balanced too. So all in all, good show. Highly recommend. Check it out if you have the shipping service / TV streaming service because it's good. Because it's definitely worth a watch. I believe it's already been greenlit for a season 2, which is unsurprising. But yeah, I like it. It's been really, really good.
Did y'all know Cable is back?
I did know that Cable is back. Why do you think Cable is back?
I heard that Disney Channel or Disney, well, it's becoming Disney Channel again. Disney Plus is adding constant live streaming channels for things like Star Wars and what was the other one?
Marvel. I think if we're talking about that one from the article from The Verge, I think they were thinking like Star Wars, Marvel, and Disney Animation.
Yep.
Yes.
So they're gonna add a whatever to it. Like I guess a part of the app will have a constantly streaming shows that are also on the app,
and with ads
and weekly drops that you now just pay for. So welcome back to cable.
Just
fucking moment. It only took us what 3 years to get back.
I don't know. 14-ish, what's if COVID? You're counting the start of streaming. I don't know.
You're right.
But yeah, like, I believe this, by the way. I know it was reported on The Verge, but it also got that information from a place called The Information. I've never heard of this website before, listener.
That'll get you a laptop, the cooties.
I mean, I'm looking at it. It seems legit. I've never heard of it, but like, I believe it. I'm seeing Sick Nasty in the chat. We are banking Catch That Quotable for next week, since we did have a late start, but we are looking forward to it, and we do appreciate you. You haven't missed it.
And we hope that it's fill in the blank again.
We are very excited about the fill in the blank.
But yeah, I mean, here's my pitch. Listeners of this podcast, don't go to streaming services to just have cable again. If you don't know what to watch or you need a constant stream of things.
Ross Sick Nancy said, guess you don't like charity.
Nope. Guess not.
Fuck not tonight. Fuck them. Look, all I'm saying is that if you need live cable TV or you always need something on in the background, we'll create another Patreon tier.
Oh yeah,
you just subscribe to that. Mm-hmm. We will email you like every 2 weeks. Hey, you want something on in the background? You watch Suits. That's it. You just watch Suits, and then here's like the three movies you watch. If you need to watch a movie, we will do it for you. We will make those choices for you.
Yeah.
Don't just go to another cable channel and a streaming service. Just, it's not worth it. We'll do the work for you. We live in this world. It comes naturally. So we're now told there are starving children out there. Now that we're
y'all, should we just play Catch That Quotable? Because I feel like I'm being pressured into it a little bit, and I'm just
no. We run this show. That's
okay.
All right.
Okay. I mean, he is a Patreon member where he's a producer of the show. I just want to say that too. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, I am confident that we started later, okay. So we're just gonna wait. Right. We're just gonna wait. Good. He Love can it. Wait.
I just want to ensure we're on the same page.
Yes. Okay. Wow.
Look. And then makes kids in Africa. It's in Africa. All right. Well, let's cue it up. I'll go ahead and pull that bad boy up. when a black man says kids in Africa, that's where you know it gets bad. All right, kids in Africa.
Yeah, I'm wrestling papers. I feel guilt. Like, I feel here. I feel guilt, but yeah. I'm gonna
double
I'm
gonna down. Here.
I'm sticking no, to my I, guns. Yeah. I'm sticking to my principles. We are
in lieu of the kids. I mean, he is Mason is tripling down. Hey, yeah.
In lieu of this, I will select a charity this week. That's that true. Is the commitment. Well, we as a podcast, we'll select where we'll be setting this money. So, in lieu of doing Catch That Quotable, we will do that this week in the background. We appreciate your patience with our programming.
Don't.
And I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
You know what? I mean, I am on the record as being saying frequently, fuck them kids. So it's fine.
Not them kids specifically, but all kids in general.
Just in general.
Big Anakin Skywalker energy.
Jesus. Yo, they are in the chat tearing our asses up. Keep going.
That's fine.
This is a great reason to join our Patreon and our live stream. Yeah.
The other thing, Brian, that there's I think is interesting in about the streaming piece to like try to pivot us back to that.
Yeah, for sure.
Is that this is going to be a way in which I feel like these streaming services try to pay some of their cost for managing them without having the cost of membership go up. Cause I don't wonder, they have to be doing research in the background, right? Like there's no way like Disney Plus is looking at the cost of membership and going, well, we can't get away with raising it every year. People will leave us. So let's God damn it, Roman. Like it's just let's start our own money.
How did they yell at Sick Nasty and Mason? Roman and Mason then teamed up in one of those goddamn pods.
They did. Wow. So I'm fine. I mean, as much as it's weird to have cable come back with like it's just a channel that's on that has ads, that's fine. If that's what they have to do to keep my costs from going up. That so be
well,
it.
I mean,
Hulu, it's weird, but fine.
It's fair.
The added Hulu component on Disney Plus does have movies. Like it does have ads. I'm sorry. So like if you watch anything that is Hulu, my Disney Plus things don't have ads to it, but anything that's on Hulu still has at least like maybe one or two ads on it.
Yeah.
Brittany was so mad. She was so pissed.
Was she?
Why? Really?
Because Brittany has like things that she has like queued up that she likes to watch. And so she kept trying to get like Hulu to launch and she's like, I can't get it to launch. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Like it's not Like, I don't know what to say here. Like, it's just not working.
It's out of my league.
It's out of my league. She goes, well, make it work. I go, you write to Hulu and Disney and you tell them to make it work. That's, you contact their customer support folks. That's not on me. But then finally I was like, oh shit, that's right. It switched over Disney Plus. And so I told her to go over there. She goes, like, now I have to go and find all my stuff again because it's not there. Right. So
I
like
this exact right. conversation.
I didn't think about this.
So that was a thing. And so, I mean, to her credit, she's not wrong, but she's like, now I gotta go find like Abbott Elementary and find that and find it somewhere. Oh, man,
that's
and
so frustrating.
I have a question for y'all real quick before we move on.
Yeah.
Just as y'all quick dad math brains real quick. How much is or did cable cost y'all versus how much do you pay now for relatively amount, I guess, the same? How many streamers would it take? Two questions. What's the price difference, like, roughly? How many streamers would it take to match to that cable cost or worth?
I paid around $105 a month for cable and for my internet service provider. And that was for both. And then right now I pay $60 a month for my internet, which is faster. And then I think I'm probably paying somewhere around like $35 in streamers currently, give or take. So yeah, I would say it would have to, like, it would have to go up by $20 in total for me to be like, but I like my internet so much that I'm not going to go back to a package thing like that again. Like I get a faster speed for less money. Midco can fuck themselves because it's too expensive.
Lost that Midco sponsorship, but
all right,
yeah,
well, we that one's gone.
All right,
they know what they're doing.
Don't say anything about Blue Peak. That's all we got left.
It varies.
I love them. They're great.
It varies so much here. But basically, it's like if you want the regular cable package, your ESPN, your HDTV. It's like $50 a month just for the cable. And then if you want internet, it's another 50. So you're looking at $100. We don't have cable or landline phone here. So we only pay like $55 for like a step above internet because we stream everything. Mm-hmm. So right now with all of our streaming stuff, we're like at that cable package.
Okay.
Yeah. But we're not, I mean, I like it better because I primarily don't have commercials unless I'm watching on Amazon, the shipping service streamer. But that's about it. Everywhere else is ad free, which is how I want to live my life. I lived through the 90s. I know bad ads. I've seen the same ad like a bazillion times for countless products I will never buy.
And that was my biggest pet peeve. That was my biggest pet peeve about watching March Madness coverage.
Oh my god!
Because it was like they would break and they would be like, "Yep, two teams about to go at it, and we're gonna kick it over to commercial before we start the second half." It's like, why the fuck did you come back then? Like, why did you come back to tell me? Like, this is so stupid.
With a random shot of the floor, it's just
a random basketball shot, and then some guy eating popcorn in the stands. Like, I don't give a shit. And then the other thing that bugged me is like, y'all, there are people in this country that are getting their pharmaceutical advice from the television.
100%.
And, can someone tell me how often and how severe is it that every single medication gives you diarrhea? Like, at some point in time, it's not worth it. Hey, do you have like kind of a rash that breaks out every once in a while and is pretty itchy? You could do that, or you could have diarrhea all the time.
That's true. Would you want to itch or do you want to sit on the toilet and sound like you're playing Gatorade?
You know what? Oh. I would gladly be a little itchy for a week than have to shit myself every day because of the diarrhea from the medication.
But come on, would you rather become a human water pistol or get rid of that pimple on your face?
I would rather just live with the pimple. I don't need to do that.
You gotta
it bugs me so much. And the ads are so bad.
He is mad.
But to your point, Doug, like in a lot of European countries, you are banned from advertising certain medications because of their healthcare system. Because they're like, why would you advertise? Your doctor knows what's best for you. Mm-hmm. So anytime I see those
smart
Yep. Anytime I see those ads like on TV, I'm just like, I ignore them immediately because I'm just like,
you finally won.
I finally won.
Doug finally won. They went there and Doug ass up in these comments. Now they said, this is way better than Catch That Quotable.
I kind of want Doug to like commentate March Madness now. Honestly, just him being like, there's a guy with a popcorn. Yeah. That's what you want to see.
The ad is this. It's like Joe working construction and he's worried all of his friends are staring at his plaque psoriasis. And I'm like, Joe, just fucking tell him you got plaque psoriasis. Nobody gives a shit. We're out here lifting girders. Leave him alone. It bugs me.
Have you ever had IBS before? That commercial kind of saved you. You'd be like,
I could probably give you the name of at least four drugs that IBS might be a side effect. Is that a Russian roulette you want to play?
Yeah, you're right. Honestly, I can't argue.
Or the other ones. This is the phrase that pisses me off to no end with pharmaceutical things. If you're allergic to this, don't take it. Fucking shit. Like, don't fucking. Okay, yeah. And you know what? If my shoes aren't tied, I might trip. Like, it's just don't tell me obvious shit. Like, hey, if you're allergic to this, don't take it. Well, I did feel like dying. So I was just going to take Ozempic until it killed
me. If you have ED, don't you want to sacrifice your heart for a heart?
Absolutely not. It is just a sack. Look, we're just going to figure it out. Like that. Yeah. If that's the case with me, we're going to have a look. I'm really sorry, but I'm not dying for an erection. Like, that's just not something that I have.
Dying for an erection, my new band name. 1, 2, 3, hit it.
Anyway, enough about my tirade about pharmaceutical ads.
No, it was necessary and it totally came out of left field, but I can't imagine you not doing it now. Like, it needs to be
said. Just bothers
me.
That's true.
To be said. And you know who's really sick of it? Brittany, because every time they'd show up, I'd be like, and look, a fucking another one. Like,
poor Brittany.
They got all the kids in there that'd be like holding hands, or it has like the B-roll footage has nothing to do with the medicine.
Absolutely nothing.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you got an elbow that's extra cracky, and you want to put some, you know, you've been struggling with this for years. It's got a little lemon in it, and you'd be like, hey,
it's two kids doing jump rope. It's like, these kids don't even have that. Like, why are we
doing the hokey pokey in the ED commercial? Why are you doing it in a Viagra commercial? Stop jumping rope in the Viagra commercial.
Right? I always wonder if they're getting that from like stock footage or if people like consciously know they're in an erectile dysfunction commercial. Cause like, I can just think of these people being like, yeah, I just made bank doing all these stock photos. And then you turn on the TV and you're like, that makes me look like I have ED.
Awesome. Yeah, the guy's like, now he got to go to the bus stop, and everybody's like, "Hey, look, that's the motherfucker with ED."
Hey, really?
It was just a little job, man. It was a little side.
Everybody, look, it's Lip Dick Rick. Oh, like that.
What up, just... Lip Dick? We love you. You know, autograph Lippy.
Oh God,
where do you go from here? Huh?
Well, we're going to pivot to talk about Civil War. So.
Well, we got our fun in. We got our fun in while we could.
Hard right, everybody. This is going to be a hard right. So we are going to. Here's a spoiler warning again for the A24 movie Civil War. Anybody want to give us a barbershop summary for this particular film?
Man. All right. Look, listen. In a very bleak possible future, here's what happens. Okay. All right. Listen. You walk in. You find out, you sit down in theater, okay? You turn on the screen, and you see America is split into different factions? Is that a safe word to say?
Yes, I would say so.
Different factions of like...
factions.
Different secessionist governments.
Different secessionist government.
Yeah.
Does anybody remember the names of the...
Oh, I do.
The Western Forces, and then the Florida Alliance.
Yes.
And then the New People's Army, which is my Chiron, which includes Minnesota, is the north/northwest of the United States.
So, boom, look, check it. The president, he wants to go for a third term, but without asking for permission.
I think he's in his third term.
Oh, he's in his
third term. Yes, yes. He's in his third term. He did not step down after his second.
did not step down. He's constantly on the radio talking to people, talking about, yeah, we stand for the United States of America and unto this republic for which it stands. The factions are at war with each other. Okay. So basically they all fighting. Some of them are trying to get the president out. Like they're trying to kill the president essentially to get him out of the office. And so, but they all have their different militaries and things. And the world is also split into different factions as you have these reporters, you have like this journalist who captures pictures and does all these things. They're all journalists, right? That's safe to say.
They're all journalists.
She's like a war journalist. Kristen Dunst's character is more like a war journalist. She is with a TV news type journalist interviewer guy that kind of
says like she's from Reuters. They said at one point in time they're from Reuters, I feel like.
I thought that was a made up name, and then I thought it was steroids, and then I thought it was hemorrhoids.
No, it's real.
Okay, got it. She's from Reuters. All right. And so she's flaring up and she's taking all these pictures. And so, like, what's happening is they want to get this shot of the president, like, dying, of them killing the president. She wants to get the world famous picture because she's a world famous, like, war photographer. And he wants to interview the president in, like, his last moments. So they also take this older gentleman with them who's an older journalist in this road trip across, but then they also run into this young lady who is aspiring to be Kristen Dunst and this war journalist. Okay, we'll get into the names later. All right, so then they put them all in this car. They want to take the back roads to get to Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is listed as, if you're a journalist and you step foot in Washington, D.C., you basically die on sight. Like, they will shoot you from a mile away because they don't want any journalists near whatever the fuck is going on. Okay. So they got to go through all of these different pieces and different areas as you kind of see how the world is split and divided. Nothing is very specific as to like, oh, it's Republican. Oh, it's Democrat. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. It's none of that. There's not a lot of backstory outside of the president is in his third term. You get to see all of how the world is adjusting and picking sides and how people are kind of living in this new America. That is kind of Civil War.
I mean, that's a good synopsis. A couple of things I'll add that I think are like important to note is the president there. The other forces are trying to take down the president, not just because he sat for a third term. And they didn't really make this super clear, but it's what he did when the other governments disagreed and they split off, which was he started bombing American civilians.
He did say that, Mr.
Because
President.
And he's practicing because the goal for the male journalist who's sort of a kind of sort of like really partnered with Kirsten Dunst. I'll mention his name here in a minute. Wagner Mora, I think, is the actor's
name.
What he says, he really wants to get the interview because, to Marcus's point, the president doesn't do anything with the press anymore. He's basically outlawed the press entirely, and it's basically his own propaganda machine that is publicly
also
talking everything. Brian.
He also disbanded the FBI. FBI is no longer a unit.
And so he really wants an interview before the other forces take on there. So they go to Washington, D.C. to hopes to capture it because they basically said, look, he's got 3 days and then they will be there and they will kill him. So you got to beat the Western forces there. Like, that's the goal. And so that's some of the other stuff. But all in all, great barbershops.
No, that was good.
So let's run down cast quick. So Kirsten Dunst plays Lee, Wagner Mora plays Cole, Callie Spaney plays Jesse, Nick Offerman is the president. Jefferson White plays Dave, Nelson Lee plays Tony. I want to pull up some of these other folks. Where's that other older dude? What is his name? I cannot find his acting credit. Is it Simon? No, that's not him. Anyway,
Kinley Henderson.
Yes. Yep. That's him.
Yeah, he plays the New York Times journalist. Yeah.
Yep. He does. And then Jesse Plemons is in this playing a soldier who is
Jesse Plemons
with
he's playing what he usually plays.
You all know what he's doing.
They did have some fun clips from his wife talking about how he got hired 2 days before he was supposed to.
Yes, he did.
And that he killed it. And she was like, oh my God, this guy's an amazing actor. And was like, oh my God, this guy's amazing.
Budget has an estimated of $50 million listed as the budget. The opening weekend so far through yesterday is around $25 million. So it's made half of that back. As word catches on, they're going to make at least that back, I would expect, based on where we're at. Runtime is about an hour and 49 minutes, so it wasn't like super long, which is fantastic. But gentlemen, thoughts on Civil War?
I think this is A24's also like highest grossing opening like weekend or something right. like
oh,
that.
Oh, is it really?
I think it might be right.
Might be.
You're right.
While somebody could confirm that, I think initially, here's how I walked into the movie.
Yeah. Right. I just want to confirm, yes, Civil War is the highest opening weekend for A24.
That makes sense.
Confirmed.
That makes
sense. On Rotten Tomatoes.
This will probably win some awards. One, I walked in high. Medical marijuana. So,
oh no.
Brian, motherfucker sits down and the music is playing and he's like, let's do it. And I'm like, oh, buddy, like this is, oh, no. I'm so worried for you.
Like I was going to a funeral watching this like movie.
The music was playing and he was like, yeah, like he was just ready. And then that first scene where the lady with the American flag runs at the water truck. And I was like, hey, are you going to make it?
That shit. Let me tell you, this is exactly how I went. I was running late because I was at dinner with some friends, right? And so I was coming back. It was a seltzer. It was like a THC seltzer that I took, like 10 milligrams.
Oh,
so okay. I drank it, right? And it wasn't too crazy, but I nice little buzz. And so I walked in, sat down next to my guy Doug in the typical seats we sit in. And I'm like, fuck yeah, let's do this. Like, hell yeah, let's get it. They're going through this whole opening sequence. And as soon as that American flag ran across that scene and that bitch exploded, I said, huh, this is a bad decision. So this is Mason took inspiration from Afro Man.
I mean,
somebody get Roman Myers and Mason out of the chat together.
We need some mods.
What combination is that? Yeah, but so here's what I really enjoy. I think one, I want to start here. Kristen Dunst did an amazing job.
Yes,
mm-hmm. amazing job. I think that mm-hmm. it's hard to play that role. Kristen Dunst is one of those people of like, I don't really see just Kristen Dunst when she's playing a role. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, 100%.
She really embodied like something completely different as like this lady, war journalist, mm-hmm. top of her game, PTSD, also numb to a lot of shit.
Yeah.
She captures and has seen a lot of shit. I think she captured that very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I want to just start there, and then I'm going to lean into the cinematography of it all after we go through our original things that we like.
Yeah, yeah. Man, Ryan. I'm going to jump in because it's funny to me, and this is important for context. This movie is billed as like an action movie. That was how it was billed like on IMDb. Thriller is also on here.
I like Thriller.
Thriller, I feel like, is the more apt description of the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm bringing it up because this movie, like, to me, it is a horror movie. It is a thriller horror movie to me.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed that, even though it scared the bejesus out of me. This movie messed me up, but like, it was done very well. The cinematography, we'll talk about, like, the lighting, everything. That stuff is top notch here. And we'll gush about that. However, Alex Garland has crafted a story that I feel does a very good job of using environmental storytelling. And it is focusing to me on the right parts of a civil war. And I'm not even talking about like, what if this happened in our country? But like, legit, this is what happens in other nations. And it's not always about like the government forces versus the rebels, right? It's these small stories that are the most like the people that are actually impacted, right? Like people in small towns who are just trying to get food for their kids, or hey, there's a war crime over there, and we'll talk about that more later. And so I feel like I really enjoyed the focus of this film, which is what surprised me at the end of it, because the pacing of it, you have, it's basically this road trip from hell is how I've been describing it to people.
Oh, nice.
Like you just have this road trip from hell from New York to DC, and you have these really small stories. And I thought the movie was ending at one point, and then they get to DC, and then it's like, no, buckle up, buckaroo. We got some stuff to show you. And I there were 2 points in this movie where I wanted to throw up, and that was the second one. So in a good way, though. And I thought the finale mostly landed it. I did have some critiques, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But that's what I liked about it. I loved the pacing of it.
Yeah, I think the thing that I appreciated the most about the movie that I liked, and it's kind of similar to Brian's, is I think the attention to detail from Alex Garland, yeah. where he almost keeps some of his bigger reveals. He hides them until the very last minute.
Which
kind of puts you on edge. So I want to refer to the scene Brian was talking about, the war crime scene. They stopped to get gas for the first time. And I remember as they were driving by, they panned by that car wash. And I remember saying out loud, I was like, are those bodies hanging in the car wash? Like,
yeah.
And yep. didn't really even think much of it. And I was like,
I missed it.
I guess, mm-hmm. I guess maybe it will. Like, maybe they'll address it. Maybe there wasn't. Maybe that was just a, hey, this is how bad it's gotten.
Yeah.
But then what he does, and this is such a smart way of doing it, is he confirms your worst fear, which, mm-hmm. yes, yeah. those are bodies hanging in a car wash. And believe it or not, these dudes are the ones who put them there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. like, it's, I think it's a, he makes you so uncomfortable, and then he makes you, like, almost, like, face that level of discomfort head on and oh, doesn't 100%. Let you shy away from it. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing I think he did masterfully with this film. And there are several other parts of it, too, where he does it really, really well. Of, like, you know, that part where they're, you know, climbing across, where they're climbing across the cars, and you're like, this seems really, really unsafe.
Yeah.
And then it leads to the scene with Jesse Plemons. It was like, your worst fear was that something was going to happen to Jesse, not mm-hmm. Jesse Plemons, but the character Jesse in this.
Yeah.
And then you've come to find, yes, you have to face that now everybody's in this situation. Like, it's just, there was a lot there where he addresses, he says, what's the worst thing that could happen? Okay, now you have to face that head on, which mm-hmm. I think is a lot and well done.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. okay, so I want to kind of go about this a little bit differently by asking you all some questions here.
Oh, okay.
But I want to bring up some points so that I don't forget them. So what would you like first, the questions or the points?
Points so you don't forget them.
Yeah, right, yeah, you should do that.
Here's a couple of my favorite points. I love the fact that this is, what it gave me was like the beginning of, and Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, dystopia, like beginning of dystopian feel.
Yeah,
like
100%.
This was, usually we get put right into the middle of some of like that kind of environment. But this one was like, what if we're in the early stages of like, it ain't all like that, but like, hey, we don't have cell phones no more because the towers don't work.
Yep.
Or like, we don't have simple heating. Like, she's heating up the film by her body temperature like, to me, and, oh, here's this empty football field. And Doug said it. He was like, it's never a good sign when who's there to help them.
UNICEF and the United Nations are there helping.
And he was like, it's never a good sign. And there's nothing but tents and cars and people playing football and living this kind of normalized life in this area of like, you could tell by the way he shot it. I really enjoyed that this is the beginning stages of what this would feel like. So that's my number one point.
Yeah.
My number two point, what I think he does really well, the diversity. I think that it takes a lot for you not to, every shot had a mix of people in it to get away from the point that it was just white versus black or this race versus this or Democrat versus liberal versus conservative. Like he made a deliberate effort to diversify every shot. If there were bodies hanging, like the bodies in the back of the truck with Jesse Plemons, there was a mix of different colors of bodies in there.
Yep. Yes.
Every shot was deliberate. And so I appreciated that effort of like, oh, they not just killing black folk. They not just killing white people. They not just killing, you know what I mean? Like it was a little bit of every, not just young and old. It was everybody.
Yes. Yes.
And then my last one was, I really enjoyed how they introduced characters. And I think it gave me just enough. You didn't need like full backstories from people. This old man, if you look up the setup of the car, and I could have been overthinking this because I was high, but
you're good.
You look up the setup of the car, right? You have somebody who's young in the gang. This whole movie to me is about kind of like transitioning as much as it's about like the dystopian feel of like if you don't do the right thing. And it's like perspectives like through the eyes of everybody in the car. You have this thrill-seeking, hungry motherfucker that really will do anything for the fucking shot, okay?
Yeah.
He's literally driving the vehicle, right? He's driving the story, driving the vehicle, driving these characters to different places that maybe you wouldn't have gone or to do things that you wouldn't do before. You have this more aged out leading actress. Kristen Dunst is like, I've gone through this. I've seen some things. I haven't the first part of happiness that she showed is when she's wearing the dress, and it's like that was, it didn't feel normal to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
to feel that. So yeah, she's like in that stage of her life. The backy is this old man who's on the nearly damn near the end of his life. And then you have young, yeah, fresh, new, everything is wow, what the fuck type 23 yeah, year old energy in the back. That's all in one car.
Yep.
Nope. And so I thought that they did really well balancing these things and not giving me too much information. Do I need to know if Kristen Dunst was married in this? No, it's not fucking important. You know what I mean? Just give me just enough information. So those are the points that I liked.
Yes. Mm. I just want to say it's really refreshing to hear you say that. And obviously I know we're on the same podcast, so some of it's expected, but like I read some reviews for this movie, and I went to the Reddit discussion because it left me feeling a certain way last night. And I just wanted to see if other people were feeling the same way I was. I had made up my mind about how I felt about this movie. And Marcus, your ability to be like, no, like, this is what's important. Like, the things you just listed off of, like, how these things are happening and who it's affecting and how that's important and how the story is told. And then you have people that are like, well, this is a bad movie because I don't even understand. I don't even understand, like, why people are fighting. And it's like, what? Like, or like, there needs to be more detail with Kirsten Dunst's character. And I'm just like, it's very clear Alex Garland is putting out this story of like, nah, man, like this is bad. Like this is bad and you should avoid this. Like, why are you not wanting to avoid this?
But he said that in the scene when they were going through the cars, right?
Yes.
He says it deliberately outright, which I thought was a fire scene. He says, what are we shooting at? How do you know if that person is a good person or a bad person that's sniping us from the house?
Thank you.
He says, I didn't like the line that he used, but I understand this.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, are you stupid, basically? Are you dumb? He looks over at the girl and he says, what's happening right now? He says, they're shooting at us. He looks back and is like, do you get it now? Like, it's not this side versus that side. We don't know who's good or bad. It's just we are surviving. This motherfucker is shooting.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And I think what helped me, one, yes, to everything Marcus said. I think the other thing that I would add that I think highlights the fact that this is a transformational story and shows how exposure to that kind of coverage, like this wasn't about the conflict. The conflict hits close to home because I think of recent events in our own nation's history. I think it hits a little closer to home than maybe we're necessarily comfortable with. Absolutely. But I think I'm going to say something and I don't want everybody to like come at me, but I think the conflict is irrelevant. Like, I think because I think you could have picked up these four people and you could have put them in Canada and it could have been the same situation. And the story is still about the journalists and it's still a transformation of someone who Jesse, the youngest character in this, who comes in saying, this is what I want to be, not understanding that you give up a part of your soul, which she does at the end. The death of Kristen Dunst at the end of this is it's a sad moment, but if it feels empty, it means to me that I think that we need to like reframe how you look at it. That wasn't just the death of Kristen Dunst. That was the death of her innocence of having an idol. And when she gets up there and she takes a picture of her, like when she takes a picture of Kristen Dunst dead on the floor and she's not crying about it, that is a different animal right now. She is a different person in this environment right now. And so I think there's a lot to be said for that. So I think if you're saying, oh, I don't understand the conflict, you missed all the other, I think you missed all the meaty character development detail in there.
But you need, the conflict is there to give you the result of the conflict though. It's just, it's the appetizer or it's the reasoning and the cover. But in order to tell a really good story, like Alex did, you got to go with what are the results of this conflict? Like,
there has to be a reason for these folks to go out and do it. And I hate to say like, oh, the conflict is the MacGuffin. It kind of is. Like it kind of like the reason why they are going out there. The whole impetus for their journey is we are trying to get a photo of the president before he's killed and to get a statement from him before he's killed. That's the reason why they left. So you're absolutely right, Marcus. That conflict is relevant and needed. And it's otherwise why leave your back door?
Well, And I feel like the other thing too is like there's enough information there for people to connect the dots. They don't explicitly state like this is what the Western forces believe, this is what the loyalists believe, but they do enough environmental storytelling that if you're paying attention to the movie, and I'm not trying to be like mean about it, but like yes, it's not going to be in direct dialogue, but it's not as out there as like Dune. Like you do have characters saying, like, oh yeah, the president bombed civilians and he disbanded the FBI. And he probably, it's alluded to the fact he suspends the Constitution. So that is a conflict. Like that is a very clear conflict. And then you have other forces like Texas and California, regardless of what you think about their politics, they're saying, nah, I'm not doing that. And they're starting this conflict. But to your point, like the lore is there, even if you agree with it or don't. But again, that's not the point. That's the backdrop. And it's the main focus is what happens to these everyday people when a conflict like this breaks out.
And I think the other thing of this, Brian, that I appreciated about that is it allowed my brain to try. I mean, it allowed my brain to try to fill in the dots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I went, because the question I started before I started, I watched this movie, I saw California and Texas together and I was like, this doesn't make sense, because I immediately went to the obvious thing. They're politically on either sides of the spectrum. But driving home, I went, oh, of course they did. They're the two largest states. They finally realized their power and their ability to try to change things for the better. Whether you agree with them or not, they went, nope, this is shit isn't gonna fly.
Well, and none of I don't feel like I'll watch it again, but there's nothing in the text of the movie that is like, hey, they're like the Rebel Alliance, the Western forces.
Yeah.
They're the good guys. Like
they don't say it.
Like no one said they're good guys. And they literally, I shouldn't say that. They quite directly say to the journalists and the audience, like, we're not capturing anyone. This is a kill mission to kill the president. Like, we're not even capturing. And it's like, that seems weird. Okay.
They say that the press secretary, she goes, well, we'll worry about the scenario. They go, we'll worry about the surrender. And they go, we're not surrendering anything. Yeah. Bring him out here so we can shoot him right here. Like, that is not like good guy language.
That no, you don't see the protagonist language at all. Is doing that at all? You don't
know.
You don't see Princess Leia being like, "Nah, bring him out. I'm gonna shoot him."
like right now.
But I did enjoy when they get to the White House, and this is obviously skipping some steps. So I'm gonna go back to these questions. Fine. There was no. They still had people that were in the White House that were aligned with the president. Whether it was like five people, you can't really tell. You know what I mean? He still has his like cabinet members, the Secretary of the State, Secretary of State. I forgot what
she was. The press secretary was press secretary. In like that forum room.
Yes, and they just shot her ass down. Like
she was in the press briefing room.
She wasn't like, even armed.
Went through the press briefing room. Mm-hmm. That's how they got in.
Oh, did she? Did she have a weapon?
She did.
I take it back then.
Right on her hip.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also, this movie does such a good job of creating the confusion of like a battlefield. Cause like I saw this movie yesterday, missed that detail. Well done. Good call.
Yeah. It was no. So, okay. I want to go back here a little bit.
Let's do it.
What was, we talked about pop moments and I like that. And I think I want to apply that to our podcast language. Ooh. We talked about pop moments last week on wrestling. What was your favorite pop moment for you? What like, and I'm gonna put a little definition to it. What woke up your, what cleared your sinuses to be like, ooh, this is one of those?
I can go if you need to think, Doug.
Narrow it down. Go ahead.
I think for me, it was the transition. We're like a third of the way through the movie. And Jesse, the new photographer, is trying to get sleep. And they do this kind of like, they lull you into this sense of like safety and familiarity. Even though, by the way, there's like clearly gunfire happening a mile off. Mm-hmm. You hear it in the sound. And it, you know, and Joel's like, you just try to sleep, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, okay, we're going to sleep. And then snap, it's a bullet. And like, it is a credit to the sound design. Cause like, I was like, is this a dream? Like, it's just so shocking. It's almost surreal. And it's like, no, this isn't a flashback. This isn't a dream. Like they're in it. Like this is it. This is the Civil War. This is what the movie is about. Mm-hmm. And it's this terrified man hiding behind a column. Like And that is based on what we have heard of war, that is war. You are just trying to survive the next thing. Mm-hmm. And it is people who look like they just came from a Jimmy Buffett concert.
I was thinking the same thing, bro. I was about to say.
You know, is the best way to say it. I didn't realize that they were probably the Florida Army until after the movie.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter in that moment mm-hmm. because that dude's getting shot at. And it totally brought me into the movie and was like, this is it. We're doing it. And you have Jesse there trying to learn how to take a picture of someone being shot at. And it woke up all of my senses 100%.
Nice. Yeah. Like it.
I think for me, not to be too obvious about it, but I think those put me like those were certain. Brian, that is a great example because those put me on edge. That moment certainly did it. The moment where the firefight at the edge of the White House, like where they're trying to get behind the barricade, like that was really super, super intense.
Yes, yes.
But the thing that fucked me up the most that made me go like, oh, Christ, like this is going to be a thing is that opening sequence with the woman with the flag bombing the water truck. That messed me up because this set the stage for me on the stakes.
Yeah.
And I realized why it was so early in the movie is one, I didn't expect it to be there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like I didn't expect that. I expected this is a conflict. To be honest with you, I saw the police and I kind of expected one of them to shoot a civilian.
That felt like a bait and switch because it felt like a huge
bait and switch. Yep. I was like, oh God, they're going to fucking hit one of them with a stick. And because that's just where I saw it going. So then when somebody who is wildly unassuming, who you didn't even notice until right before it happens, picks up a flag and runs in slow motion to bomb the truck. That to me, like that was such a, oh God, like this is the stakes for what's going on and what they're involved with. The rest of it was military combatants, people who were armed fighting one another. Mm-hmm. That one messed me up because I was like, no, the stakes here are different. Like the stakes with whatever conflict is going on is a whole other level and is something really serious that is affecting it at the level that there is a suicide bomber in the middle of New York City. Mm-hmm. Like that to me was just another level.
With an American flag.
With an American flag. Because again, I think the thing, and from listening to interviews and things like that, I think that's the thing that we're trying to go here is that I think the statement is like, we all assume none of this can happen or you see it somewhere else
out of my mouth
and you go never here. And then what Alex Garland does very well is he goes, no, this stuff happens everywhere. It's not unrealistic to assume that it could happen here. One interview I want to share with, and I'll share with in the chat, Lisa Foddle from NPR interviewed Alex Garland and she, Leslie Foddle, I can't remember her first name, but she used to be a military reporter. She was on front lines in places like Baghdad and Cairo and parts of Africa. And one thing she says is, she goes, so tell me about why did you make some of these choices? He goes, because whether we want to admit it or not, and whether it gets covered or not, these things are happening. Mm-hmm. And that's why the press is so important because they have to shed the light on, and you have to see it. Like you have to see it to believe it, that it could happen. And so I think that to me, that statement compared with that scene with the American flag goes, okay, that's why we're following them around is we have to see this to believe it and to understand it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Next question.
Marcus, what was yours?
Oh, yeah, did you have one?
Yeah. My pop moment is probably it's really late in the movie, but after it's her crawling out of the pit on top of dead bodies.
Yeah.
And what got me was it's the length and the duration of the shot because it didn't just show that she fell in the pit and landed on bodies. They showed her struggling to climb over dead bodies to get out of the pit.
It was grotesque.
And the way it's framed, when you see that pit and you're standing on the outside of it, looking at it, it doesn't look big, but then when she's in there, that fucking pit takes up the entire frame and you are just trying to figure out where she is in what literally is a pile of dead bodies. It is what makes it. When you said it's a horror movie, I was like, no, he's not wrong.
I almost threw up. That
scene alone was like, holy shit. What a scary moment to see that. That was crazy.
I
mean, it did make me queasy 100%. That's like that. And I don't know. I think it was just the visceralness of Jesse, like literally having to climb over these dead bodies. And to your point, Marcus, like it's a lot deeper than you think. And you're just in a dead bodies. It was chilling.
Here's why I like the scene. I may have inferred entirely too deeply, but like you said about the environmental explanations and shots, right? If you look at where they are in a field of green grass. Okay.
Yep.
Like bright green grass. They are also pouring something before they get there, which seems to be like seeds or some type of fertilizer or something. So what I would have imagined what they were doing is that was a perfectly cut out square. It seems like they were killing people, putting them in the dirt, and then grass was growing over the top of them. So that entire field could have been filled with, I interpreted it to be like, they have fields of people being killed. Like, you know what I mean? But maybe that's a stretch, but I don't know. It was something about, it seemed like it was inferring that they were doing that constantly. Like they've
killed. Yes. Well, I mean, it would be, yes. To me, it went, oh, what a convenient place to cover up a war crime.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That's the thing is that like, again, going back to a point I made previously, we assume that war crimes happen in a jungle a million miles away. And they can happen anywhere. And it doesn't take much. There are, we live in South Dakota. Like, it wouldn't be hard. Oh, fuck. Hold on. Not that. But you know what I mean? Like, what I was trying to say was, it's not outside of the mind to say what war crimes were committed and then covered up. You know what I mean? I almost went down the rabbit hole where it said, too hard. Commit a war crime. That is not the route. Hey, no. Nikki BT, I swear to God, I'm not committing war crimes. I swear to God. I'm just trying. I was going down a rabbit hole. I had to stop myself. I got excited. But what I'm saying is that it's not outside of the mind to say, you know, if it were to happen, North and South Dakota would be great wet places. Nope.
Because okay, go ahead, I'm trying to help you. Because Please. Of mainly
ruined,
because of the
we
rural
ruined Nikki's
area.
Whole night. She's like, what the fuck am I watching?
I'm just joining her there. All right. So the next question is, if you were a war crime, what war crime?
If
would you
were a war criminal, what would be your crime of choice?
Thanks
why?
For joining us.
And where would you go? Huh?
Well, clearly mine's mass graves. So clearly.
But no, to your point, Doug, it's these rural areas, right, that are out of the way, that are unsuspecting. Right. And it's people who don't think it can happen.
Welcome.
Right. It's for people that don't think it can happen. And yes, it can easily happen. And I think what they were spreading was lime.
Oh, that's what
I
it was, Brian.
Think it was.
Yes, I got it.
Right.
But yeah, like I totally get that as a pop moment. It made my stomach queasy. Well done, Alex Garland. I hated it.
Awful. Yeah.
All right. Can you give me your favorite moment or least favorite moment? I'll also take least. Like, which one did you like? Ooh, I don't like that, but in like a good way. Or which one did you like? Oh, they explained that pic. They painted that picture or delivered that message very well.
I think for me, I hate to bring it back to a scene that we've just spent so much time talking about.
No, I think you have to.
But I think just the way Jesse Plemons, the way Jesse Plemons played that.
Mm-hmm. What type
his
of
character,
American are you?
What that phrase of what kind of American are you?
That's the movie.
Is sort of like deep on so many other levels.
Right.
And it's just it's just so masterfully listed. He's so I love it when someone is so calm, they become menacing. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about him that I love the way he played that. He was not on edge. He didn't look like he was on edge. He didn't look angry. He didn't look mad. He looked calm. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask you a very matter of fact question because I'm prepared for whatever the results are.
But here's the thing. That's nobody the knows what the right answer is.
And that's the reason why it fucked me up.
Yeah.
And you can say I'm reading too much into it, but that scene, I think one of the reasons it's so scary is like, you don't know who he's going to shoot. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
And you're like, who's going to make it out? And in the back of my mind, I was like, he's going to shoot all of them. Like, if there's this, like, he's just dragging it out. Like, that, because the reporter, and I'm totally blanking on his name, and I'm going to find it really quick, but the New York Times reporter, Sammy, like, he's absolutely right. He's like, no, they're, like, all dead. Like, if you go over there, you're dead. And Jesse Plemons' character was absolutely stringing it out because he enjoyed it, or he enjoyed the power, or he just enjoyed leading the conversation. And it's like, there's no, there's not a win scenario here. Like, this, this is it.
Brian, I think if you take it a step further, I think the other reason why it's so menacing is we don't know what side he's on.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know.
They never explained it.
Who is he fighting for? Yeah. Like, is he fighting for the Florida Alliance? Is he fighting for the President's Army? Is he fighting for the Western
Forces? He asked him, though. And they asked him. They said, aren't you with the Western Forces? And they said,
he doesn't answer.
He doesn't answer. He doesn't
answer. He literally, like, skips right by it. And you sort of go, like, oh, fuck. And that's the thing that makes it so hard is, if I don't know who you are, I don't know how to answer the question. And it essentially becomes this, like, standoff of, you don't know me, I don't know you. So the only choice is we go back to that scene where it's like, there's somebody shooting at me, so we're shooting at them.
Yep.
That's what this is. And that's, again, it just takes it to another level where it's menacing. Like, it is a menacing moment, 100%.
And I will answer your question, Marcus, but I do want to take a Films in Black and White victory lap, because we all watched this preview and we all went into the chat about Jesse Plemons and we all clocked that sequence exactly what it was.
We talked
about it. I can't remember what episode. I'll bring it up later, but it was like, oh, Jesse Plemons is going to be this awful white supremacist. And basically that's what ended up happening. So I just want to take a victory lap here. Please join us for our podcast. Follow us for more futuristic insights of what you can expect in movies. So look, you got to give credit where credit is due.
That's all true. Right?
We saw Jesse Plemons and we were like, this guy's bad news.
This is gonna be bad news for
We know what he's like when he pops up in roles. It's like he pops up and he's like, oh yeah, that guy's gonna fuck some shit.
He just asked what kind of American we were.
I remember he was married to Kristen Dunst.
So I leaned over in the movie and I randomly said, I wonder what their sex is like.
Okay.
I mean,
I bet it's weird. Does he wear those glasses?
No. Those glasses were a touch that.
Those are my Bubbler glasses. They gave me those when they sent me packages from Bubbler. And I was like, how the fuck did he get those?
Okay, so don't drink Bubbler. Apparently, it.
Whoa.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard.
We know you're listening.
We love you.
Reach out to us. We'll share our media.
Stop sending glasses to white supremacists, Bubbler.
No free
passes from me.
We'll advertise you on a bracket about, like, your favorite Marvel character.
What's your favorite drink? It's Bubbler every time.
Obviously I think that the scene that we just talked about is, like, one of the best sequences in the film, but I think for me, one of the other, like, good sequences in the film for me was when they get to the Western Forces forward base, and essentially they've just survived Jesse Plemons. We have Sammy bleeding out. He's probably not going to make it. And, like, the way they use sound to kind of convey all this anger and sadness, like, there's these Chinook helicopters that are just, like, I was worried my theater speakers were going to blow out because it was so loud.
We don't have that problem in Vermillion.
Oh, okay. But, like, it was just like the thump, 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 thump. And it's like dropping off a Humvee, but you see Joel, the character Joel, just screaming because he just lost a friend and everyone is processing. But I thought that was a really, I just thought that was a really cathartic and creative way to convey this sense of loss, to convey this sense of futility, and to have this oppressive noise on you, just like this unrelenting force you can't get rid of. And all you can do is try to deal with it. I thought
I want to add, and then you combine that with the fact that Kristen Dunst is literally cleaning her friend's blood off the seat.
Yes.
Oh. And there's all of this cacophony of sound. Like, it's just so much in that moment.
With the gut punch that they're like, oh yeah, by the way, they, like, surrendered. The war's over.
The war's over.
Oh, so we did all of that for nothing. Cool.
Yeah. Which is, I was not expecting that in this movie.
No.
And I applauded in this movie. I think it is so smart, and I think it makes so much sense for the finale, which I'll talk about at another point. But it's like, this makes sense. Like, all of this does narratively make sense, and it focuses on the right things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think for me, my favorite moment was the transition. So there's two parts in the final scene when they go to the White House, right? They have the scene where they're at.
Oh, man.
There was the black man who was a soldier who was hiding behind the column, and he's leading the journalist is leading the younger photographer by holding the back of her like jacket, the bulletproof vest, right, through the thing and kind of guiding her to keep. I asked Doug, like, Why is he doing that? Why is he doing it? He said to keep her moving, to keep her like
pushing. Yeah, she slows down, forward. She gets in the way, and somebody gets shot. Yep. It's on her.
Right. And so, and I want to add to that, I love this idea that the journalists are so much involved. Nobody ever stops them from being a part of, like, oh, the military is about to push into the White House.
Oh,
they
yeah.
include them into, like, they're giving signs and signals of, like, yeah, we about to go in right here. You need to hop in right here, and are just molding them right into the function.
Yep. Well, and I don't know if this was intentional, but it definitely felt like the Western forces, they wanted that. They wanted those news reporters.
They wanted
to
right there. I said that at the end, Brian. So that was going to be my next point. Everybody loves the picture. Everybody wants to be a part of history, right? And so that's the picture that goes in the history book is, look at how they posed up in front of the body. And that's what we would do overseas, you know, in other countries. But to do that in your own land, in the White House, is a crazy thing to think about, right? Like Nazi flag on January 6th inside of the, right, you know what I mean? So you know, I'm just spitting facts. These are things that happen. So one of the things that I liked was on the back end when they're storming, like, and actually going into the White House, it transitions where Jesse is no longer afraid. She's going to go get those fucking shots. But the person that he has to lead and push forward is Kristen Dunst. Because she's throwing up, she's crying, she can't stop going. And he looks at her at one point and is kind of like, he looks at her and the way he looks at Jesse, like, oh God, this transition has happened. She's not going to get the shot. Jesse's going to be the one to get the shot. And I like that. And then when she gets shot, there's a scene or this snapshot of Jesse laying next to the body of Kristen Dunst's character. And there's bullet casing surrounded her. There's two bodies next to each other. And when she gets up, there was almost this transference of like spirits, souls, feelings. When she laid down, in her innocence. But when she got up as this numb character of what Kristen Dunst was. She embodied everything that Kristen Dunst was. Did not hesitate to get the shot. Did not hesitate to get anything.
Yeah, that was her transformation. That was her transfer. That was that was the moment. That was the climax of her transformation.
Yep.
Like,
that's an amazing. Yeah, that's an amazing call out and description of that. Because I didn't think that in that moment. Because I'll be honest, like the assault on the White House is so well done. Mm-hmm. I didn't have time to think about it.
Yeah.
And that's the part, by the way, that's the part of the third act that surprised me when I'm referring back to what I said earlier. Cause I thought basically when the cars drive out of the White House, like, this is it. Like, this is, it's going to be a whimper, not a bang. And like, then, man, it was this moment. I don't even know how to describe it. When Kirsten Dunst looks at the White House, she's like, "Nah, he's in there." And I'm like, "No way!" Like, one, we have more.
Marcus fucking called that shit.
Oh man,
he was sitting in the theater. He goes, "It's a those are decoys. He's in there."
Like, this idea of like, one, there's more of the movie left. Amazing, but two, like, oh no, like, you know, the whole it's not a haunted house, but it's just like this house of horror of just like, you know, what's going to happen. And it wasn't the fear of like, what's going to happen. It was the fear of like, I know exactly, this movie has told me what's going to happen and it's going to be awful. And and there it is. You go straight down the hallway to it. I just really like that action sequence. So I'm really glad you brought that up, Marcus.
No. All right, two more questions. What was your favorite picture that was taken in the movie that stuck with you after it was over? Because for those that haven't seen it, they do a combination of as the movie is going. So something that he does really well, as I'm explaining, allowing the guy some time to think.
Yeah.
There's an amazing contrast that Alex provides here, because there was a song that was randomly played and I was like, why the fuck are they playing this song with everything that's happening. But one thing he does really well throughout the movie is capture the contrast of things. Mm-hmm. There is a car wash with bodies hanging in it. Mm-hmm. There is there's all of these different shots of like the White House and a military person with a gun in the White House in mm-hmm. rooms that are like legendary. So he captures all of these moments really well. Was there a picture that stood out to y'all that they kind of flashed on the screen the most? I can start. I liked.
Yeah, go ahead.
I liked when the friend, you know, they were trying to get the guy from behind the column, and like Brian said, they're dressed in the shirts. You have these regular dudes that are dressed in these regular Florida shirts, like these button ups, Jimmy Margarita Time type shirts, bulletproof vest. Yes, with like a bulletproof vest over the top of it, and the guy is reaching out, like mm-hmm. trying to resuscitate or trying to bring back his friend, and you can see the life leave his body. I thought that that was a perfect capture of like, at the end of the day, these are regular people fighting a war.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That have been recruited to either fight a war or volunteer to fight a war, but they're not like dressed in military clothing head to toe. They got a fucking bulletproof vest on with a button-up shirt from JCPenney.
Yeah.
So I thought that that picture captured things really well.
Yeah, I think that was going to be mine too, Marcus. I think the way that it was framed and the way that it was shot, the way that he's reaching back at that moment, I thought that was just really, because he's calling for help, but it's mm-hmm. like he's the only one who doesn't know
that he's going.
Like, the rest of them know. Yeah. The rest of them know, and they're like standing there, but he's still fighting. Like, I thought there was a lot to that.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to make an Nickelback joke too, but I decided not to.
How you remind me, Doug.
I think bringing it up. Look also at this
photograph.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair game. That's fair game. We need a little bit
Marcus,
of levity.
Marcus, that is really inappropriate that they would say, look at this photograph by Nickelback in the middle of a song about war photography. It's just rude. It's insensitive. That's what it is.
Brian, keep going.
I mean, I think for me,
I had not.
I appreciated the photograph. And I think I'm remembering this correctly, of the downed helicopter in front of the JCPenney.
Ooh, that's a good one too.
I liked it mainly because narratively it's like where, I mean, it's kind of where these two characters of, you know, Kirsten, you know, Lee and Jesse are starting their journey together, and they're trying to figure out what they are. But also I feel like it's giving this vibe of like, yes, like this can happen where you live. There could be a downed Huey in front of your mall. Like this isn't that far off to make believe. And I know there's some other critics and reviewers that are like, I couldn't get with it. Like I couldn't believe, or I couldn't buy into what I was seeing. Like it wasn't real enough. And I just don't get that. I didn't was not my perspective. It seemed very like the photography that was done. It was like everybody knows a JCPenney. No one would ever think a war would be there. So having those two things next to each other in that contrast, I thought did its job, even if it was on the nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
I think,
Brian, that was well said. Yeah, I think that's where Kirsten Dunst starts taking some responsibility for Jesse a little bit. And that's such a, it's like one of the really good, wholesome moments in the movie.
I couldn't tell what their relationship was not that you really needed to. It was, I was trying to figure out what their relationship was trying to flourish into. If it was mother-daughter, sister-sister, or romantic. I don't think there's any romance in here. There was one scene that made my stomach curl, which was the lead journalist trying to hit on Jesse in the back of the car. Well, he was like, you don't want to be scared alone. Don't be afraid.
Oh, you're doing a very specific person's voice. That's not his voice. So we're just going to, I think that you might be projecting a little bit.
You don't want to
I understand.
Wait, no, that's right. What the fuck am I projecting? I don't start with me, Doug.
I don't know, man. I don't know what it is. I did not read it as romantic, but I get what you're saying though, Marcus. I understand how it can be read as romantic.
When they're trying to dress on, I was like, huh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. There was like some type of tension there. And also like kind of with the movie, you're like, I don't know, is this guy legit? Like he kind of seems like a few fries loose of a Happy mm-hmm. Meal. Mm-hmm. Because he just is like such on an adrenaline high. So you're kind of like not so sure about him at times in the movie.
I mean,
but the movie
they're in the box, Brian.
No, doesn't matter. They're not in the actual Happy Meal.
That Happy Meal with no toy is kind of psychopath. Like, you know, what's the point?
But no, and he's an adrenaline junkie. That ends up what it is. Like, he's not, he doesn't have other motivations other than getting that fat.
Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Yeah. Wake up.
I understand why you read that scene that way, though.
It was very creepy. All right, last question. What
is our favorite type of war crime?
That's
an inappropriate question that I'm not going to answer.
Actually submitted a question, Doug. She said specifically, Doug, where would you commit a war crime and what is your current address? So,
and I plead the fifth.
That's weird. So, that's where the FBI is at my door.
All right. Yeah. But...
Did you guys hear that glass shatter like in unison?
That's really.
It's like getting a. Oh, wow.
She goes, that's crazy.
All right.
They're asking me
what
questions.
What did the journalist represent to you?
Oh, I thought about this. Mm-hmm. I can go.
I did. Go ahead, Brian.
This movie is very much to me. It's very a lot of things in this movie are pretty clear to me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, again, my interpretation is that these journalists are basically, they are representing this like last line of defense to the nation's soul. Not to be dramatic, but that's kind of what it feels like, of just this nation that has kind of become complacent. And there are people, they make comments during the movie, again, more environmental contextual storytelling about how Jesse's family and Lee's family know there is a civil war happening.
Pretend it doesn't.
They do not care. They're on a farm and they do not care.
Yep.
And I think that later in the movie, as you hear Lee, she's like, part of the reason I did this was so that like I would take these photos and I would send them back, letting people know like this is terrible. Don't do this, or like avoid this at all costs. And that is a little bit in contrast when she also says during the movie, like, hey, we're not here to make opinions. All right, we're here to take pictures and let everybody else sort them out. And she kind of betrays herself in that moment of like, the whole reason I did this job was to show how terrible it was. So I was like, so you did care. You did have an opinion. You weren't unbiased, even if you didn't think you were.
Yeah, and the line is, I take the pictures and somebody else puts the story together.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so it's like journalism is this window to the world to show people like, this isn't the way to go about things. These are the terrible things that happen. And to me, it is this story of how these journalists tried to do that and nobody listened. Nobody cared. Mm-hmm. Nobody listened. Mm-hmm. People were ambivalent. And that is the theme I kind of drew out of it, because there are people that I know that are like, oh, I actually just don't read the news at all. I don't read the news at all. And I'm so much happier. And it's like,
fake news.
Yeah. Like, cool for you. But like, there are things that are happening that are hurting people that you can even get involved with at a local level, that you can help your fellow community members. And obviously this is taking it to a dystopic extreme, but like, this world happens partly because there are ambivalent people not caring and not doing anything. And these journalists, essentially, it shows them failing. They failed to inform the nation or sway them in any particular way. And it's not necessarily their fault, but they didn't do what they set out to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, even what's his name? And the older gentleman, the older journalist says, it's happened. Kristen Dunst, Lee, has lost her love of the art of journalism.
Yeah.
And it happens, like, she's so numb to it.
Sammy.
Thank you. Yep. Sammy says, oh, Lee's lost her art for journalism. And kind of, he was right. He was absolutely right. He didn't lie. And you can see it in her eyes that she just didn't have that same passion until Jesse kind of come back, since she sees this picture that Jesse took and says, that's the one.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And she says, that's the one. So you can see it. I think for me, the journalists are, I just think, I don't know what they represent, but you could see that they're more protected. And so I feel like you see that they, when you wear the vest, you're a little bit more protected. You need to wear Kevlar. You need to don't just ignore it. You need to wear Kevlar. You need to wear the hard hat. And so they are easily welcomed into the fold. They want, people want you to capture their moments. They want you to capture what the fuck is going on their side of things, and they protect mm-hmm. them during the duration of it all. When we went to LA, right, we road trip to LA, and we were with the guys that do LA Sundays, where they block off the street intersections.
Oh, yeah.
And they do a lot of Nikki is defending us, and I think
thank you.
Us in chat. There is, like, LA Sundays, they block off the intersection. They do like the car tricks and all that other stuff like that. One of the things we all had cameras when we were going, and we told them we were with media. They immediately yeah. welcomed us into the fold and would tell everybody as we got to new places, they're with us, they're media, because they wanted us to capture what was going on and right. being a part of that moment. And that was kind of what I felt like with this movie was, you know, mm-hmm. when you're on whatever side, you want your story to be told through the eyes yeah. of the journalist. And if a journalist is with you and you let them in, they can tell your side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and I think that there's a deeper message there, but I can't really put it into words at the moment.
No, I think you got it. I do think that is, and I think you underscored it too with your earlier point about how the Western forces were like, nah, you stack up with me because right. we need the reporters when the moment right. happens, of it being a when and not an if.
Right. Right. Thank you, Brian.
I think for me, I look at, there are two, unfortunately, at the in the time the times that we live in, I think that there are two types of truth. There's lowercase truth, like lowercase t truth, which is subjective to the individual. And I do personally believe that there's uppercase truth, which is what really happened, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are mm-hmm. facts, right? Yeah. And what I appreciate and what I think that this movie does an excellent job of is I think that it really shows that journalists are crusaders for capital T truth. Mm-hmm. Like they are there trying to, against all odds. I mean, they are in an environment where the president does not like you, has actively rejected yeah. you, has said if you set foot in Washington, D.C., you're basically, the rumor is, no confirmation, but the rumor is you're executed on site.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of that there, and yet you are still committed to go to the one place no one else would go. Mm-hmm. That's a commitment to uppercase T truth that I think is admirable. So I think it does a good job of painting these folks as heroes. I do think, Brian, you bring up an interesting discussion that I've had a hard time with.
Yeah.
Squaring up, which is this idea of like people who are ambivalent.
Mm.
Because on one part of me, I get and I empathize with their ambivalence.
Sure.
Like some folks' brains, the notion of trying to understand what is happening mm-hmm. thousands of miles from
yes.
you
mm-hmm.
is anxiety producing. And so through a series of self-protection, you have to be like, I can't. Right.
Yeah.
Like I can't do it. And I think, but you also that to the other side, because you're absolutely right. Like even educating yourself to a certain point, even mm-hmm. if you do nothing about it, at least now, you know, right. Like there's some of that knowledge. The G.I. Joes weren't wrong. Knowledge is power. Like the more you know about it,
the more
you know is certainly a really true phrase. So yes. I think there's just a lot there for me that I think mm-hmm. this movie does a good job of saying like, who should you feel? Who are you mad about the fact? Like, who are you more like? Are you more like Lee, who's like yeah. mad that her family in Colorado is actively mm-hmm. like putting their heads right. in the sand?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or are you more like Jesse, who's fuck them? Like, if they don't want to believe yep. it, that's fine. Yep. This is the story I want to tell. And I think it does a really good job of being like, you can both be doing it for different reasons.
Yeah.
But so long as you're going for that ultimate mm-hmm. pursuit of like uppercase T truth, I think you're in
yeah.
you're in good spot.
Okay. I have to agree. I do have to, you know, I've been having a lot of conversations about Gen Z. I'm actually reading a book and I can't remember where
read a book, everybody.
Generation Lead. It was a book that was given to me from my supervisor, and just kind of, you know, I've been having a lot of conversation about feeling your feelings and how this generation loves to feel their feelings. And I do understand not wanting to, you know, you don't want to do that all the time, right? Like for me, I can't turn the TV on and just be so
sure.
But I also can't afford to be unaware of what's going on and be just oblivious and ignore what the fuck is going on. it is a balance that has to be made, and the type of journalist and journalism also matters, right? Because some mm-hmm. are sleaze bags and they only want to do it to get a story, to get something out for just like hot press, real quick shit. Some are still trying to capture like the moderate journalists that aren't trying to push a propaganda or an agenda, are still trying to like figure it out. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of crazy, but that's kind of where I'm at. Gentlemen, I didn't have any other questions. No. Are there anything else from the movie that we felt like we wanted to cover that we missed that was important?
I mean, no, I just wanted to say that the cinematography in this is
incredible.
It is,
it's going to get an award.
It's incredible. It the lighting that they use is just I would be happy to talk to the lighting specialists who worked on this movie, because they did a scene in pitch black and only, I don't know if they only used firelight to simulate or like to
with Vin Diesel
light. They
shot it in pitch black.
Oh, they shot it at night. Like, sorry, not Vin Diesel. No, I apologize.
That's me. I thought we were talking about the movie Pitch Black.
Oh, fuck. Riddick was in this.
Riddick was here. No,
where was his bald headed ass? Sorry about that.
No, you're fine. No, they like shot this movie in the dead of night. And
that wasn't a joke. That was dead serious. That was not even a joke. I'm not even gonna play it off like I was joking. No, that was me.
This movie is so serious. I welcome Vin Diesel showing up and being like,
I did have
to get on this spaceship. That's a terrible Vin Diesel. Because this movie does such a good job of being like, you should be scared. You should try to avoid this. Like, what are you doing? But anyway, the lighting is phenomenal. The way that the shots, like shot composition, it is of mm-hmm. course also amazing, but just the ability to have these wide panoramic views of destruction and then focusing on these really, really quiet or loud small moments, like in the corner of an office park that's a battlefield, or in the White House, or like in one intersection of a city street, and make it feel big and small all at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's just like, if you haven't, go watch 28 Days Later. Like, if this is your first experience with Alex Garland, go watch 28 Days Later and then the rest of his work. I've seen everything except Men, so I can't really talk about that, but I you'll enjoy it if you enjoyed this movie. So I just wanted to give a shout out for that, because I feel like it really added the gravitas to this movie that it needed.
Word. Anything else for this movie? Anything else for the movie?
I do not have anything else. I think we covered it really, really well. I certainly would go see it. Like, it was well done. It's worth a watch. If you can see it in theater, great. If not, I think this would be just as enjoyable at home, like one of those. So like, if you can't get to a theater, don't sweat it. But I think it's going to be good wherever you watch it. So certainly worth a watch.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you sat through this and you haven't seen the movie and you're still interested, like go to an IMAX and watch this.
Ooh, shit. That'd be
because you're in for a treat. I wasn't able to get to an IMAX, but yeah, I wanted to say that out loud because the sound is
for shame.
Brian, do we know what we're going to review in the future here coming up?
I do see the chat comments.
Nikki gets an award because she heard the war crime comment and she went, maybe I should stick around.
And then followed us as our first Twitch follower too, right off the war crime comment.
Out of context. Most out of context you can say for this movie. And she's Nikki, like,
you can catch the beginning of this every Wednesday when we drop the audio on everywhere. So this
fucking will be real episode coming out Wednesday.
So films in black and white. Our episodes come out Wednesday wherever you get podcasts. We haven't decided on a movie.
What would you like us to review?
Got any recommend? I mean, next week we're gonna do a bonus. We're gonna watch The Life Aquatic, which is a Doug Wagner recommendation. That'll be exclusive for our Patty family folks. It'll come out on Monday, but the podcast itself will release that same Friday. So you'll get it either way. And then I think after that, we gotta check the calendar, but we'll keep it updated. But.
We'll release a new calendar for May too with that coming up, and then next week is probably going to be a news roundup episode our listeners that are listening to this in podcast format, so you can look forward to that, and then we'll be recording our bonus episode next week. So it's going to be one of those shorter news episodes, but bonus and early access to that for our Patreon.
We might even talk X-Men 97 a little bit next week because we got some shit to unpack with that too. So yeah, I think there's some shit to unpack there too. Gentlemen, we have reached the lovely time where it is time to plug things. Brian, what do you got to plug this week?
Before I plug, I just want to give a shout out to everybody in our chat. Our chat was exceptionally active tonight, and we appreciate that. Nikki, Mason, Roman, everybody who stopped by our chat, thank you so much. So the one thing I'm going to plug here is my wife's Etsy store, Color Me Confetti. Head over to Etsy.com, type in Color Me Confetti for all of your printable event needs. You throw in a party, don't go to Amazon. Don't go looking for overpriced stuff. Just go to Etsy on Color Me Confetti. You just print that stuff out. You got a printer, you got paper, print it out. It's all at home. Color Me Confetti on Etsy.
Absolutely. Marcus J, what do you got, sir?
Make sure you follow the mantra, never offended, always humble, or N-O-A-H for short. You can hit the link in my bio, Marcus J. Destin on all socials. Buy yourself some gear, listen to some music, stream some music. I got music out right now. Soultye, S-O-U-L-T-Y-E, also has music out right now. But whatever you do, stream the music, stream the mantra, wear the mantra, love the mantra, never offended, always humble.
Right now. Right now. I want to plug this podcast. So if you enjoyed our conversation about Civil War, head over to wherever you get your podcasts. Check out some more of our episodes. Share us with a friend or a family member. That is the best way for a small podcast to grow. So pass along that way. If you're feeling generous, head over to patreon.com/filmsinblackandwhite. Sign up for one of our tiers there. That's how you get all the fun bonus stuff we're doing. In the meantime, we have a three-step process to success, gentlemen.
What is it?
Brian, lay us down with that first step.
Hey, folks, I'm here to tell you to read a book. Marcus is already living this. He's a living embodiment of this. Read a book, all right? And it can be nonfiction. You can just read about the things happening around you or read a newspaper. What this movie is basically begging you to do is just read about the things that are happening around you. Begging you, please, just read any about the current events happening around you. Read a book.
Yeah, absolutely. Marcus, what's that second step, sir?
If you want to survive the apocalypse or a third term president, make sure you're drinking some water. That's the shit that you just never think about when the apocalypse or dystopia area happens. You always forget, like you take it for granted. Drink some water, you know what I mean? Keep your piss clean.
Yep, it's important. And most importantly, look, y'all, wash your ass. You got to wash your ass. Also got to wash your legs. Look, some of y'all are just getting in the shower and you're not washing waist down. And it smells. Like, we can find, we know when it happens. I know you think, like, oh, the water's just going to run down my legs and it'll be fine.
No, it's not.
It's not true. You got to loop that shit.
You're just wetting up funk. You know, when you sit down, we can still smell you. That air that comes off your ass.
Yes, that is how our population skews, Nikki VT. This is not for you. You can go do whatever you want. This is, anyway, but this is like, so this is all like, you're not washing waist down. You're not scrubbing your legs. You're just basically making it worse. So here we go. That's just where we're at. So be sure to wash your ass. That does it for this week's episode of Films in Black and White. We'll be back next week with another outstanding episode. So in the meantime and in the between time, stay safe, stay healthy. We love y'all. We appreciate y'all. And we will catch y'all next week.
Any slick-ass comments? Doug, what war crime are you committing after you get done with the...
I don't know.
He's going to bed.
I'm going to bed. I am going to bed.
You're going to wake up with flashlights in your fucking face.
There's a flag on my work computer now. They're going to come and get me.
Yeah, for sure. Your algorithm is
awesome. We got him.
Oh, I'm in a lot of trouble.
Bye, girly.
Bye.
He's fucked.
Listen to me.